This is Sacktown Sports.
And you can tell that there's been a change behind the glass as you tap to your right hand. I think Simone's right-handed. Tap to your right hand, go to the bullpen. Simone will be board hopping, producing the rest of our show. Got you till 2 p.m. as we talk all things Kings, getting ready to close the chapter on the 76ers and send them back to Philly so Drapes can say what's up and have a cheesesteak out there. By the way, Chris told me he got a cheesesteak. I asked not too long ago where the best cheesesteak was, and Chris told me Limelight, and he went and got it last week and didn't invite me. It's all good.
No.
Well, I had to make sure it was good first.
That's right.
You know, I couldn't say,
Alan, quality assurance. That's all that is.
That's right. So,
exactly.
Hey, Sixers, hopefully you stay out of the play-in and you get Joel Embiid back. Thank you for the W last night.
Appreciate it.
Mavs, you're up next. But before we preview the Mavs and get into all things Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving, that's about at 12:15. It is time for some success cake as opposed to blame pie. And I want to know, 916-339-1140, where is the Mike Brown hate now for the reigning coach of the year?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, why is he doing this?
Mm.
Why is he doing that?
Rotations.
Why isn't he playing this guy? Mm-hmm. Why isn't he playing that guy?
Sasha.
He calls Sasha. We'll have an update on Sasha before the show ends as well. He calls on Keon Ellis. And look, players have to make the plays, okay? But you can't say players make plays when they make plays, and then when they don't make plays, it's Mike Brown.
It's all the coach.
That's not how this thing works, okay? The Keon move, and we smelled something coming before the Kevin Huerter injury. Keon starts to show up, okay? When Kevin Huerter got banged up before, and Keon shows up. Davion Mitchell, okay? And maybe it's not necessarily about the rotations and what he's doing. Maybe it's about the fact that he's instilled enough confidence in these guys to stay ready at all times. Davion, I know it feels like you got leapfrogged. I know it feels like nobody's talking about you anymore, but we still got you. And we got a song.
Yep.
Up nine. And we got a song for you ready.
Crazy.
When you start hitting some shots. So what does Davion Mitchell do? 25 minutes, 3-for-4 from 3-point, 6-for-9 from the field, 18 points.
Come on. Rack it.
Mike Brown
Come on.
Has these boys ready.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could all change tonight. But it feels like this last stretch of games, what are they, 7-3?
7-3.
They are rocking and rolling. They're still going to be the Kings and lose to teams that they shouldn't lose to.
Right.
But the good thing is they don't have any more gimmies,
Not many.
So in theory, they should at least show up the way we've seen them show up against teams that are playoff caliber.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll add to that and say, you know, Mike Brown, to your point, and I think you talked about it earlier, but He understands exactly what he's been doing all season long with his rotations, and I won't say all season long and knows exactly what he was doing, but he had a plan of what he was going to do, I think, all season long. I think he's talked about in the past, more so last season, about how he learned from Steve Kerr. You know, sometimes you do have to keep watering the pots on the bench. You know, yeah, it might be easy to let Kessler Edwards ride the pine all year, but if you give him a couple minutes here and there, like you're saying, it keeps you engaged. Like, it prevents you from feeling like you're explaining with Davion. Like, Davion could have easily felt like, oh, I got skipped. I got passed over. Oh, no one's ever going to think about me. Mike Brown continued to give him time, continued to give him minutes. And I know in the middle of the season, he was a bit sporadic with those. But, you know, now that the playoffs are headed right around the corner, I think it's serious time. And you're seeing the rotations become a lot more solidified. I think Mike Brown's done a great job all year long. I think the players have kind of let him down a bit with their performances. But, yeah, absolutely. I think Mike Brown has shown here, especially with just this stretch of games, he's got the finger on the pulse of this team perfectly. And, I mean, they're playing perfect defense at the exact right time. So I got to give a lot of credit to Mike Brown, but, of course, to the players as well. They've definitely stepped their game up here recently. But I think there's no way – the fact that Mike Brown hasn't lost this locker room also, I think, is really big, because I just can't see a lot of coaches, especially coaches that have came through here recently, that would have such an up and down season, but not lose the locker room. You're seeing them play their best basketball at the end of the year after they've been through everything that they've been through, all the ups and downs. That's where I think Mike Brown saying earlier this year, this team is the most connected group I've ever been a part of. I think this moment right now is that exactly showing that these guys did not give up. They believed in themselves all year, and they knew that they were capable of doing something like what they're doing right now. They just never were executing it.
It took a while to get there, and they're not there yet, but they're in a good position to continue and push this momentum exactly where they want it to go. And you want to be playing your best ball at this time. If the Kings had started out hot and now they're starting to cool off, you'd say, right. Well, Clippers. They're going in the Clippers, they're going in the wrong direction. It feels like they are starting to head in the right direction. Yeah. And let's get to Steven, 916-339-1140, if you want to be a part of the conversation. Let's get to Steven, who wants to be a part of the conversation. What you got for us, Steven?
Good morning. Or afternoon, really.
Afternoon,
I don't know what
afternoon.
It is.
Technically afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Technically it is afternoon. All right, so because Nate is not here today, right, I'm going to do this. Since we're on the Mike Brown thing, do you think after all of this, do you think he still wants to trade Mike Brown for Steve Kerr straight up?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I don't think so.
I highly doubt it,
Nate. I hope you're listening because that one.
Steven
that
keeps
one,
receipts,
Nate
man.
Said that?
It was a dark time.
Okay. It was like a week ago?
It was a while ago.
It was definitely
a while ago, but I can't, yeah.
And I saw something yesterday, Chris, about the winning seasons for the Kings.
Yes.
And consecutive winning seasons and Mike Brown doing something.
Only Rick Adelman has done.
Right.
Yeah.
One other coach in Kings history.
Yes.
Mike Brown out of town, though.
Mike Brown out of town. No, exactly.
Mike Brown out of town.
The only coach who has brought multiple years of success to this team. But yeah, anybody could do what he's doing right now. Come on.
Right. Of course.
This is ridiculous.
This is from the 916. Love Brown. But do you think he would have pulled Herter for Keon? We'll never know.
Yep, that's exactly. I guess we'll never know.
I guess we'll never know.
A lot of people wanted to know. I guess we'll never know.
And there's no reason to speculate about it.
There is no need to put any sort of definite on either because you could realistically argue, much like the who's the best player on the team, you could definitely argue either side of this, and I think either side would be right. You could say, you know, clearly he was stubborn all season long. He had no intentions of ever pulling Herter. But like you said, I think even setting up this segment, you could already start to kind of see the writing on the wall a bit. There were rumblings that, you know, maybe you might want to think about making this move. So I think you could reasonably argue either side. And I think it's probably best that we don't have a definitive answer.
If I was going to answer.
Uh-huh.
All I would say is that if it got bad enough with Herter, I think he would have.
Yes.
I don't know when,
but
if he continued to barely get to 20 minutes and Keon continued to play the way he was playing, I think so.
It would have been tough.
I think so. It would have been a better question of Herter playing okay and Herter being at 25 minutes, 6 points, and just doing enough. Then I think maybe they don't make the new move. But from what we had seen for the most part, I do think the move would have been made. But we'll never know.
We'll never know.
Will never know. But what we do know is that the Kings are rocking and rolling right now, and it's all starting on the defensive end. So if we're doing a success cake, Chris.
Credit cake.
A credit cake. That's what it was. If we're doing a credit cake, I mean, Keon, for this 10-game stretch.
Yeah.
Keon.
65. I was trying to lowball it, right? Like, I think it's pretty high. And even if it's not, even if that's not like exactly accurate in terms of like how much he's individually doing, again, it feels like almost just the shift of like the mindset of, hey, this guy is going to be playing a lot more. Davion's going to be playing a lot more. Even Duarte is going to be playing a lot more. It's the fact that all of those guys have some sort of defensive identity that's pretty core to who they are. I think that's played a major, major factor. You know, I wouldn't put it as bluntly as what the texter did by saying straight up, this is what happens when you play Keon and don't play Kevin. But it is a result of for Kevin not being able to play, and these guys who have just a little bit more of defensive-minded abilities are definitely getting a lot more time. So I would say 65% Keon representing what the Kings have changed about their defense.
Okay, and yeah. If Keon's at 65.
And his individual ridiculousness, too.
If Keon's at 65,
yeah.
Where else are we going to go with Mike Brown?
Yeah.
Sabonis, you got to slot in at 15, 20
sure.
at all times.
Well, yeah. And then we're getting towards running out of number. What that puts us at about 80%. Mm-hmm. I want to give at least 5-10% to Mike Brown because of, you know, again, going back to the drawing board and saying, I don't know if people fully appreciate how hard it must be to, again, tell professionals, guys who make millions of dollars, no, we're going to do like basic training here. I think that takes a lot of courage and a lot of humbling, really. And it might have been forced upon him by his team's performances, but I do think it's kind of crazy for a professional coach to get to the point where he says, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to do it. We're going to go incredibly basic. I don't care if it drives these guys crazy.
Do we know when this happened just throughout the course of the season?
Off of how we've heard it, it sounds like maybe a month ago, maybe like a month and a half ago. So I think it was very recently. Like, I think it was post-All-Star break that this happened. I mean, what? The players-only meeting happened.
Yeah.
Is that right after the All-Star game, if I'm remembering correctly?
Yeah.
I would imagine some time after that because, yeah, we had started to hear rumblings about, you know, oh, you know, there's stuff going on behind the scenes just in terms of, you know, defense and offense and how much they're focusing on what. I think for the most part, a lot of this work has been done in the past month and a half or so.
It reminds me of, was this D2 or D3 Mighty Ducks? Where are my 90s babies at? Was it D3 Mighty Ducks when they got to beat varsity and as freshmen they beat varsity in a completely
where
realistic.
Where did Verlade go?
Verlade, man, this left, is where we need
he left
you.
12 minutes
shout out
too
to Chris Verlade who did a great job the first 2 hours. D2 or D3 Mighty Ducks, when did they have to go back to basics?
We'll text him.
Coach Carter or Remember the Titans, all these movies.
Yeah.
That's what happened with the Kings, and now they are seeing the benefits and the success from that, but hopefully it continues tonight against a Mavs team that has just as much to gain and maybe more to lose because the Mavs are already down 0-2 in the season series. We preview the Mavericks.
Let's do it.
When we return, Sals and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Little country Beyonce to get you ready for Dallas.
This ain't Texas,
ain't Dallas. No, but and you gonna be out here for a second.
Yep.
You
got
it.
California think. Sunshine.
So if you were an NBA player and you're in the situation, because you know me, big foodie out here in these streets.
Yeah.
But do you think, okay, if I'm now like a 6'7", very obvious looking NBA player, do you think they just DoorDash a lot or are they out in the streets? Are we going to see some Mavericks in the wild these next 2 days?
That's a great question. You'll probably see a stray Maverick at like Chipotle outside of Doco.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like,
where
I would
stay. Like, where's the hotel?
They stay at the Sawyer right across the street. So, I mean, they're going to be in Doco.
Mm-hmm.
I would not hang around there all day, please. But they'll probably, I mean, you'll probably see them, you know, going to Chipotle, maybe grabbing Starbucks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they'll go to Echo and Rig that's connected so they don't have to, you know, I'm just thinking like the more outside you are, obviously the more visible you'll be. So I feel like probably staying within that centralized location.
You have everything
will probably
you need. You have everything you need.
That's so true. Everything you need at Doco.
You really will.
I'm sure they'll grab a nice dinner somewhere downtown.
They have to.
Yeah.
They have to. And they're just far enough to leave. Cause I'm thinking if this is the same situation with the Lakers.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're heading home.
They go home and come back, I think.
I would think, let's see, game on Tuesday. You can get back Wednesday morning, like 2 a.m.
Right.
And yeah, I would think so. And then practice Wednesday and Thursday, maybe fly in Thursday night.
Right.
Yeah, I would think so, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is like just enough time to where it's like you kind of have to make that decision, and then ultimately it's probably just worth it to stay.
Well, hopefully they leave. Well, they got to stay, but hopefully they leave on Friday night with two
L's.
Fresh, hot L's.
Yeah, they might have to check those.
I hope you're in Southwest.
Hopefully some big L's.
You can check them for free because they're going to be over 50 pounds.
Good point.
Preview the Mavericks. Mavericks enter on a 4-game winning streak. Dallas has won 8 of its last 9 games. Kings need one win to clinch the season series as they are currently up 2-0. And Chris has some more on the Mavericks, the last 10 games and last 3 games.
Yeah, just kind of looking at their trends here the last couple games. We'll start off with their last 10 games. They are 8th in offensive rating, 7th in defensive rating, and 8th in net rating. During that time, they're 5th in the NBA in points per game, 7th in the NBA in field goal percentage, 26th in three-point percentage, and then on the defensive side, 14th in opponents' points per game, 13th in opponents' three-point percentage, and 5th in opponents' field goal percentage. This is where things get a bit scary, though, when I look at just, you know, because it is interesting. Think about how long ago was 10 games ago for the Kings. So when we look at these sample sizes, it just tells you different things. And, you know, 10 games ago for the Kings was the San Antonio Spurs game. That feels like so long ago. That was right before the Kings really started clamping down on defense. They were a completely different team. Now, if you look at the last 3 games, that's the Washington, Orlando, Philly. That's just you have a better idea of how they're playing right here, right now. When you're looking at Dallas's last 3 games, so how are they currently playing? They are number 18 in offensive rating, which is probably a good thing, especially when, again, considering their past 10 games, they've been 8th, so they have slipped on the offensive end. This is where things get scary, man. They have locked down on defense here. I mentioned earlier the Kings might be the best or second best defense playing right now. It's because Dallas is actually locking it down on the defensive end, which no one would expect. Dallas has the number 1 defensive rating at 103 flat, which is 103 points per 100 possessions. They are number 2 in the last 3 games in opponent three-point percentage, holding their last 3 opponents to 28.7% from 3. And from the field, opponents are shooting 44% from the field, which is 5th lowest in the entire NBA. They're also 9th in net rating, so they're playing really good basketball, even though they're not knocking down their shots. That was the most surprising thing to me, though, was just the fact that the Dallas defense has actually been the thing that's been carrying them these last couple games. And, of course, 2 of those are against San Antonio. So maybe, you know, hold that with a grain of salt. But that's Phoenix. I'm thinking of Phoenix's schedule. They played Utah last night and held them to 105. I think that that's really the most interesting development from the Mavericks side of things, is in the same way we just have gone on the past hour and a half about how the Kings defense has done all of these wonders. We know that the Kings offense is going to be there. It's important that their defense is there. Dallas is playing the same exact way. Their offense is incredible. You know Luka's going to be able to get a 30-point triple-double every single night. You know Kyrie's going to be able to give you at least 20 every single night. But it's the fact that they're actually playing defense here that makes them so scary. They've got those 2 bigs in Daniel Gafford and I wanted to call him Blake Lively, but it's not. It's Derek Lively. Derek Lively, who have just been incredible around the rim. So that's definitely going to be an interesting matchup, especially for Sabonis, who we've seen here against some bigger, you know, taller guys. Sometimes Sabonis can struggle with. It'll be interesting to see how he's able to throw his weight around.
So Gafford, they get him in a trade, and it feels like he's transformed them a little bit. They also pick up P.J. Washington, who our own Brendan Nunes had played around with, maybe the Kings picking up for that boom or bust because he's got a lot of potential. So 2 pickups that has somewhat transformed their team a bit. And not only is it about who they gain, it's about who they lost. Seth Curry and Grant Williams head to Charlotte. And Grant Williams, apparently there was a lot of drama.
Yeah.
And nobody liked Grant Williams on the Mavs, and they basically had to get him out of there. I saw a story that he was talking a bunch of trash to Luka in a practice.
Yes.
And Luka gave him 27 points in a row or something crazy like that. And you know, it's funny because somebody on the text line, the 916, is saying, "Don't forget to give Mason Jones his flowers for sparking the bench." That's from our guy Amid Rock. And it's funny because
in a way, and I know Nate's already been mentioned today, but in a way, I feel like that's what Nate was trying to say. Like, don't be the annoying guy as far as Mason Jones and the bench mob, but mm-hmm. I don't think that's what Mason Jones is giving off. It's clearly what Grant Williams was giving off. And Grant Williams is right in that frame of the dude. It sounds like he was the guy saying, oh, come on, man. Let's be better. Let's do this.
Right.
Let's do that.
You say you want to be great. You want to win championships.
And you just got here, brother. Right. And just the way it's coming off, I'm not feeling it. And they got him out of there.
Yeah.
They were not messing with Grant Williams at all.
No.
And
I mean, you don't mess with their savior. That's why.
You don't do that.
Yeah.
And they got him out of there. They're trying to get their vibes right. They have a very easy schedule to close out the season. And yeah, it feels like the Mavericks are trending in the right direction.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a battle of ultimately who's hotter.
Yeah, no. And I'm looking at their numbers, the individual numbers, the last three games. You mentioned Daniel Gafford, 16 points, eight and a half rebounds with two blocks and a steal and a half per game. And he's just incredible around the rim. Like he had that record going for a while of most consecutive made field goal attempts. I think he made 25 in a row. I'm looking at it here. He's shooting 84% from the field his last three games, seven makes on 8.3 attempts. Can't really do much better than that. That's all pick and roll too. Mm-hmm. And then that's what's going to be kind of scary about these two matchups defensively for the Kings is getting Sabonis out in space like that defensively, especially against a guy like Daniel Gafford or a guy like Derek Lively, who does have that quicker first step to get around Sabonis potentially, that's not great. That's kind of where Sabonis gets caught in a no man's land where his foot speed isn't really fast enough to backtrack and keep up with those guys. So I'd imagine a lot of high pick and rolls with Kyrie and Luka and just getting Sabonis in as many actions as possible. We'll see if the Kings continue to do their switching thing. Mm-hmm. We saw them yesterday go to a zone for a long portion of the game. I wonder how much that affects Dallas. It'd be interesting to look at Dallas's points in the paint production because looking at their three-pointers, they do not have any three-point shooters. Luka, his last three games, two makes on 11 attempts, 24%. Kyrie, two makes on seven attempts, 27%. PJ Washington, 1.3 makes on five attempts, 26%. They do not have good shooters.
Can we not do that?
What's that?
I don't like this.
The fact that they're not playing well leading into the game.
I don't like how
makes you feel like they're due a bit.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. What was Kyrie?
Kyrie, 2 of 7, 27% from three his last three games.
And what was Luka?
2 of 11, 24% his last three games.
I don't like that.
In a weird way. Again, that's why it's so key. The Kings playing good defense. Keep 24 might be a bit extreme, but don't let Luka go 6 of 12 from 3. Don't let Kyrie get open from 3. Don't let those guys get comfortable. Don't let them be, even looking at the last 7 games, those numbers are still down. Looking at their last 10 games.
What about Tim Hardaway Jr.? What's he been up to?
Tim Hardaway, looking at his last 10 games, he's at 8.5 points per game on just under 20 minutes, shooting 35% from the field, 34% from 3. He really hasn't been good at all, and he was huge for them in their first half of the season. But even so, looking at that, their last 10 games, I think you said it earlier, they're 8-2. So even with all of these terrible shooting performances, it's again a sign that Dallas has really acknowledged what the Kings have. Your shots aren't always going to fall, and you're going to have to play defense at some point if you want to get these games. I would say that if Dallas is going to shoot a low percentage, I'm feeling really good about the Kings' chances. I just think Dallas is so heavily reliant on Luka and Kyrie being great that it's almost like those guys need to combine for 60 points for them to realistically have a chance if the Kings are going to hold the rest of their guys to their averages. And, you know, I just feel like the Kings' offensive firepower is ridiculous. And at the other on the other side, too, I don't know how Dallas is going to slow down Sabonis. I don't know if Gafford and Lively's size or their height is going to be enough to throw off Sabonis. We've seen him really bully guys like Chet Holmgren, bully guys like Anthony Davis even. And I don't know if either of those two guys present the physical nature that a guy like AD does. So I kind of think Sabonis might go crazy these two games.
Their long wing, Derek Jones Jr., is another guy who
is somebody that the Kings don't have a guy like that.
Right.
So that'll be fascinating to watch how the Kings react to that. Quickly, last night, Luka, 29 points. Kyrie, 27 points. Tim Hardaway Jr., 13. Mm. Daniel Gafford, 13. So they're finding ways to score even when they're not scoring the three ball. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Couple quick stories, getting back into Kings and Mavs. Shohei denies any involvement with sports betting. We will talk about that later in the show. Also, new kickoff rule in the NFL where they have basically copied the XFL and basically the defense just or the special teams that is kicking off the ball is starting way closer to the opposing team to...
I guess you don't want people going full speed running.
So they're trying to negate the concussions, which come the most in those plays. So go check it out. Adam Schefter, a bunch of people tweeted it and posted it. And yeah, there's really not enough time for anybody to really crack someone. I think it'll lead to probably less returns for touchdowns. But I mean, it's also going to hopefully get rid of all of those touchbacks as well. I know Shannon Sharp and we were talking about Mighty Ducks. There's also the one with Mark Wahlberg, Vince Papale, where he's on the Eagles. He's on the Eagles, and he gets his start with special teams. So a lot of players.
Right. Invincible?
Invincible.
Like
yeah. When they find their way on teams, it is first and foremost on special teams. Might not be the case moving forward. So go check out that video. Another video making the rounds. I believe people are saying this was at a Laker game or an LA game. Debo Samuel.
Oh, I saw this.
Is walking and he's pretending like he's on the phone. He's not on the phone.
He's not
and
on the phone.
And there are these kids, there are about four kids around him and they're just badgering him for an autograph.
Yeah.
Debo, please, please. Meanwhile, somebody is an adult sounding dude who has the phone, who's videoing the whole thing, is just asking him, is Brock Purdy the best quarterback? And Debo, it clearly wasn't a situation. And one thing that I noticed or that somebody brought to our attention is that, you know, people get doxxed all the time these days and people find out where you are and the whole thing gets blown up. These kids, all they had was, I guess, literally autograph binders, right?
Yeah.
They had no Niners apparel.
Nope.
They had nothing like that. So people are trying to figure out whether it's fair or foul, a good look or a bad look for Debo. A lot of people are saying, bleep them kids. Debo doesn't have to do anything. Go check out that video. And yeah, it's pretty funny to me. I don't know, man. The whole do you owe these kids anything?
Yeah.
Debo, it's not a Niner games. Like I said, these kids have no Niners apparel.
They have nothing on them.
And they're not even
right
saying anything about Debo. All they're saying is, Debo, please sign. Debo,
and
please
I'm
sign.
Even looking at over what and over they're again. Asking him to sign. I don't even know what it is. It kind of just looks like it's a blank piece of paper. Like it's a
they're
folder
like,
or something.
They found out where he was, and they were just trying to get the autograph. It wasn't as if these were Niner fans, and I know kids
and they're not
kids.
Signing jerseys. They're
no,
not signing
weird.
Like his card or anything
no,
like that.
No, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. So what side do you fall on? We will take your thoughts on that as we continue to talk about the Kings and the Mavs. You have some things on Daniel Gafford versus Sabonis
That's
in the past.
Yes, and this is I was just talking about this matchup, and will it be tough for Sabonis? So why not just look into it? And the answer looks like Domantas Sabonis has absolutely zero problem with Daniel Gafford. Let's start on Gafford's side of the thing. Daniel Gafford in 10 career games against Domantas Sabonis, which has ranged from 2020 all the way through this season of 2023 when he was still a member of the Wizards. Gafford has averaged 9.3 points, 4.7 rebounds, and 1.9 blocks in those games against Sabonis. I would say the best game against Sabonis of his career happened in 2021, 15-13 with 5 blocks. He was 6 of 8 from the field. That's a good day for Daniel Gafford.
Mm-hmm.
Looking on the other side of the fence here, Domantas Sabonis' career against Daniel Gafford, 10 games, 27.9 points, 12.1 rebounds, 8.7 assists in 10 career games against Daniel Gafford. You know, I don't even know if I can pick one. Just pick, give me a random number from 1 to 10.
7.
7. I will pick the 7th game that they played against each other. Let's see here. This will be a 30-point, 10-rebound, 6-assist, 3-steal game from Domantas Sabonis, where he went 11 of 15. That was when he was a member of the Pacers, and Gafford was a member of the Wizards. Since he's joined Sacramento, I'll just read these three games out. Since joining Sacramento, 3 games against Gafford. He had a 20-15-10. He had a 39-10. And last time he played earlier in, and when he played him earlier in December this season, he had a 28-13-12.
Wow.
So
it's barbecue chicken.
Yeah, it's barbecue chicken. I mean, Sabonis, we've talked about before, mm-hmm. it's kind of tough for Sabonis to get 20 points in a mm-hmm. game. So the fact that Sabonis has averaged 27.9 points against Daniel Gafford tells you not only does Sabonis like that matchup, he's hunting that matchup and right. feels like there's nothing Gafford can do against him. He's just going to be the bigger guy. And it's not like Gafford hasn't really played a lot of minutes. There's a lot of 20-plus mm-hmm. minute performances out of Gafford in those 10 Sabonis games. So it is going to be a barbecue chicken night tonight at Golden 1 Center by the looks of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, those numbers are crazy, insane.
That's pretty that's like Jokic numbers, really. That's like Jokic season average.
Well, I cannot wait to discuss that during prop talk.
That's right.
Who's going to say, I want to adopt.
Simone called dibs on Sabonis tonight as he takes on Daniel Gafford and the Kings take on the Mavericks in a 2-game series for the Kings to hopefully clinch at the very least.
At the very least.
So we'll be very clear about this. It's not that they have to win both, but it would be nice. And we'll explain why during Pocket Watch when we return. And yeah, the Suns, we'll make fun of them. Sal Watkins, Sacktown Sports. It is time to Pocket Watch and the most important pocket watching of the night is right in front of us. Kings Mavs. Okay? And the reason it is so important, obviously, if the Kings win, they get the tiebreaker. And Chris found it for us that if the Kings lose both of these games and split, then it would go to the division record.
I believe it's conference, but let me look that up for sure. NBA playoff tiebreakers.
And that would be pretty even, Steven, as well. So
it says better record in head-to-head games, which is obviously that's the situation that we're wondering about. Then it goes to division winner, which I don't know, actually, because nobody knows what divisions even are in today's NBA.
Division
anymore.
Winner as in if someone wins a division and someone doesn't?
I believe so, is what that is saying. And Dallas, thankfully, is in the same division as the New Orleans Pelicans, so they more than likely aren't going to win their division. It then goes to higher winning percentage within division, so it actually isn't. Conference is the next one up, so it ends up going to your divisional record, which, let's see here, the Kings in their division, 9-6, Dallas, 9-5.
So you said first back-to-back, and first then back-to-back second back-to-back was
division winner.
Division winner meaning did one of you win your division or who had a better record?
Yes, winning your division.
So if neither of them won their division,
then it goes to higher winning percentage within your division. And then if those are tied, then it goes to conference record, which again, even those is really close.
So just win tonight.
Win tonight, and none of those things are in question. It's not like it's a guarantee that Dallas will 1,000% be put behind you, but it definitely does help, especially when you look at something like that with the tiebreaker. The Kings, at the very least, would hold pretty much, by all intents and purposes, you could think of it as a half game over Dallas just because they have that advantage.
Right, and right now, the Kings, that advantage is already built in.
Yes, it's already
to what
right
we're
now.
Looking at, because that's why they both have the same
right
record, but the Kings are in and the Mavs are not. So the Mavs probably feel like they really, really need to win.
They need both. Yeah, they want both. They need both.
Yeah. The Kings need what you've been saying is the reason that you've been so hard pressed for the Kings to win both is simply because of how the games after these games. Yes. And because the Kings still have to go to Boston, who might already have it wrapped up.
They might, yes. They
might already have it wrapped up. But they got to go to Boston. They got to go to New York.
OKC.
They got to play OKC.
Clippers, Pelicans, Suns.
They have all of those teams, and the Mavericks don't have any. So really, you just want as big of a cushion as you can have. But so those understand, they win tonight, the Kings do, and they get the tiebreaker.
Yep.
It's just more about doubling up.
Yeah.
Against the head-to-head with the Mavericks because their schedule is so soft for the rest of the season.
And what are maybe this just sparks something. If the Kings beat the Mavericks tonight, what are the odds that Dallas treats that Friday game with any sort of gotta have it? You know, like, because if they lose tonight, then on Friday there's no fighting for the season series. I guess at that point, they're fighting for standings, which I guess is still very important. You're fighting to then bring it back even with Sacramento. And then, you know, again, Dallas is definitely in the better positioning down the stretch. But, you know, maybe you can take a little bit of the sting out of Friday, because if you lose tonight to Dallas, that means both of those teams need Friday equally. And, you know, not that the Kings necessarily need more of hyping themselves up, but that's obviously just a little bit scarier of a proposition walking into that game feeling like, no, we truly do have to have this, and Dallas having that same exact mentality with some days leading into it too.
Well, and obviously the Kings and the Mavericks coming off a back-to-back, the Mavericks had to travel. Yeah. And we've joked about the Mavericks having to hang out in Sacramento, a place they're not used to. They're not going to be at home, but they still will be well-rested. They're still going to have some nice beds to sleep on. And if you don't get this game tonight, where both of you are a little bit tired, but you would imagine the Mavs are more tired, you don't get this game tonight, then the Mavs will be well-rested and have momentum heading into Friday and essentially a winner-take-all, not for the series, but the ability to control the series if you are the King. So I think tonight is huge.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. You got to treat this – I mean,
just get it out the way.
It's so obvious, but you got to treat this like a playoff series. Like, I know you guys played yesterday, but this is a – what you need to view this as is, especially if you're the – I mean, if you're the Kings, this is literally – first round of the playoffs, you need to take advantage or take – yeah, you need to take advantage of your home court, okay? It's a seven-game series, and we know how important winning those first two games of the series are. You pretty much took care of your side of the things. You then head to the road for the next two. This is a nice little ramp-up for what actual playoffs is going to be like, with actually some pretty similar days in between as well. This is a perfect – precursor to the playoffs. You really can't have a better preparation for the playoffs than this little mini series against a team that's right next to you in the standings. I think the Kings are going to be ready for it, man. Again, I think that after you see how this team performed last year in the playoffs, I think that same level of intensity is going to be brought tonight on national TV. And let's not forget, Dallas was not in the playoffs last year. They don't know what it's like with this group to truly have your feet held to the fire.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see how they respond to this, because really, in a weird way, crazy to say, Kings have the experience advantage here over Dallas when it comes to playing these kind of games.
Wasn't it last season when Dallas got caught in a weird situation to where they didn't control their fate, but if they did win, they could have snuck into the play-in. And either Luka didn't play or something weird happened, and they kind of just threw in the white flag.
They could have been a 10 seed, but instead of fighting for the 10 seed, they ended up sitting Luka because they ended up getting their draft pick instead. If they wouldn't have, if they would have made even the play-in, or I'm sorry, if they would have made the playoffs, if they would have made it out of the play-in and into the playoffs, they would have lost their pick last year. And so they just deemed as an organization, what's more important, barely sneaking into the play-in and then maybe getting swept, or potentially setting ourselves up by drafting somebody, you know, in the top 15 that could potentially help Luka moving forward. I don't even remember
who they took. Yeah, I was going to say, who was it?
Let me see who they took even last year in the draft. I mean, obviously, the Kings ended up trading with Dallas, and they got Olivier Maxence Prosper. Haven't played him at all this year, so I actually don't remember. Oh, it was Derek Lively, of course. Yeah,
there you go.
It was Derek Lively that they took, and, you know, you would probably say that in a weird, twisted way, was probably the right move. Derek Lively could potentially be a center that's going to play with Luka the next 8 to 10 years. So, what's, you know, it was an interesting calculation. I think the league ended up doing some investigation into it. I don't remember what they ended up finding, but
They didn't find anything.
And then, no, they fined them.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm looking at it right now. $750,000 for conduct.
Huh. That is interesting. I mean, yeah. And again,
that's
I think you're saying it's worth it.
That's worth it.
$750K for a center for the next 8 years. Like, I think it's worth it. It's just a matter of, you know, if they felt like they upset Luka in that season, and clearly, you know, clearly they're back the very next year. So I guess, you know, you can't really argue with the results. But it'll be interesting to see how Dallas is prepared for those kind of moments. And, you know, we saw Luka in that playoff in the bubble where he went crazy, but what's he going to do in games here? Again, where it's been a while since he's played one of these high leverage games. Is he going to try and do too much? Are we going to see a Luka, you know, 40-point game with 8 assists and 12 rebounds and he just has the ball in his hands the entire game? I think the best case for the Mavericks is something they don't usually do, and that's working the ball around. But I think it's going to be a lot of Luka and Kyrie tonight.
From Brandon Deitzman on the Sack Chat, I want tonight to be a dub so they, the Mavericks, have to sleep with a beam looking down on them.
Yeah.
That would be pretty funny.
Yeah, that hurts a little bit more, too, because the hotel's right there. You look outside your window, you just see L, just a massive L pointing back at you all night. It's like that. You remember when Elon had the X posted outside, like outside the San Francisco building, and everybody across the street was complaining? I want those complaints coming from Dallas tonight.
The beam, by the way, was a little bit supercharged last night.
Really?
It did this weird thing where, I don't know how far up in the air, but it faded endless as it goes up higher, but then there was like a weird blotch of maybe, I don't know.
Probably a cloud or something?
Like no, but it was clearer. It was even stronger.
Really?
So it goes up normally. This is from Natomas, where I'm at. It goes up normally, and you can't really see it. But then about, and I'm terrible at this stuff, but very high up in the air, there was a random 20 to 30 feet of it that
really
was incredibly strong. I don't know what happened. Maybe it was just how the clouds were looking, but it's never that bright from where I'm at. So, hopefully we get to do a redo tonight, I can show you exactly what I am talking about.
A beam breakdown.
That's right. When we return, continuing to pocket watch, the Suns lose to the Spurs without Wemby, and the Warriors, if they don't win tonight against the Heat, they're in big, big trouble. And if the Kings, if they don't win either and they slip into the play-in, there is a team that could sneak into the play-in that the Kings do not want to see.
No.
Styles and Watkins, Sackdown Sports.